Welcome to another edition of Technology Espresso Cafe Radio. Dave and Jacqueline bring you up close and personal to the innovators, contributors, and creative minds in and around technology today. Visit their website at www.technologyespresso.com. There you will find their broadcasts with guests from all across the technology spectrum, their social media handles, and related content. So sit back with Dave and Jacqueline as they serve up Technology Espresso fast, hot, and intense.
And hello, just want to welcome everyone to a Sunday edition of Technology Espresso Radio. This is Jacqueline Sanders, along with my co-host.
Hi, Dave Blackman.
And welcome. We're excited about this Sunday. We've got a beautiful day in the background here as we broadcast from Atlanta, GA. And today, we're going to be speaking with Francisco Nunez. We talked about earlier about being nervous right before a show, and there goes my nerves right there. But happens to the best of us. But at the same time, I want to introduce someone, Francisco Nunez. So first of all, welcome, Francisco.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jacqueline.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a pleasure and it's an honor. We met just not too long ago through a great networking facility, BDPA, the Atlanta chapter, which we're always excited about, and you are just one example that we were so anxious to get on the show to showcase you as a young person and what you've accomplished. So let me tell our audience a little bit about Francisco Nunez. He graduated from Morehouse College with a degree in computer science and a minor in mathematics, near and dear to my heart. That was my same lineup for my undergraduate. He has a rich background in scientific research, participating in research experiences with institutions like Stanford University, Georgia Institute of Technology, University of Michigan, and Ecole Polytechnique, a European engineering institution. He is a product of the BDPA High School Computer Competition Program. You often hear us talk about HSCC and the wonderful fundraisers to help make sure that other young people have that opportunity. He's going to speak to how that has influenced him. And as we go through, he has also worked for several technology companies, some you'll recognize readily, like Hewlett-Packard, Microsoft, and the Boeing Company. And he currently serves as a senior system analyst with FIS Global. So congratulations to you on that achievement as well. And his true passion lies on mentoring and life coaching. He is a part of a mentoring program focused on developing young leaders with a focus in self-image, financial literacy, entrepreneurship, the importance of great associations, especially in the minority community. So, again, welcome. And when I read what you've accomplished already at such a young age, and then people can, as we've posted it on our website, they can see your face and see that you're a young person, and already you've achieved some great things. So we know some great things are going to come from you as you go forth. So we are just so excited to say that we knew him when it was all just a vision and a dream. So we know we expect a lot more great things, and we're going to be right there following you and keeping up with you with your achievements. But let's dive right in for our audience, and let's talk about some of the thought process and the experience behind this resume. So, Dave, I'll let you start us off.
Absolutely. I see Francisco. He is well-traveled, not just across the country, but across the globe. He has been almost everywhere that I'd want to be. So congratulations on your accomplishments, your international accomplishments, as well as your national accomplishments, Francisco. So tell us about how you got started. How did you pick your major going into college of math, computer science, and math? Is that something you just fell into, or was it part of a grand plan?
Well, David, it wasn't it wasn't serendipitous, but what I would say is, as any other, you know, adolescent matriculating through high school or middle school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. In my mind, I wanted to be an NBA basketball player, you know. So that was my thing. I loved basketball. I had a passion for it. And I would have to say my godfather, who was an instructor for the D.C. chapter in D.C., you know, I visited him one day. And he's like, well, I got a Saturday class. I want you to stop by, you know. And I said, well, what does that entail? He says, okay, well, you got to invest about 4 or 5, you know, hours into a class on Saturday morning. I'm like, yeah, I'll pass on that. You know, I could be doing a lot of things like sleeping and playing basketball and watching Pokemon in the morning. So, you know, long story short, I ended up going to the class and ended up liking it. It was in technology, flash micromedia, action programming. Progressively began to get more and more inundated in technology, the different nuances of it. I evolved from action scripting, flash micromedia class to BDPA, HSCC, spent 6 years pursuing that, and it naturally progressed and manifested into a desire to be in computer science.
That's great. That's great. Now, so what were your other aspirations going through college other than computer science and math? Did you have any other endeavors? These are computer science and math, they are at the core of STEM education. And what did you undergrad in other than math? Or do you have any arts aspirations or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I'll say this. I am a fan of the English language. I'm very passionate about speech, linguistics, diction, articulating. And that manifests itself in a myriad of different ways. Whether it be hip hop music, I enjoy freestyling and rapping. You know, I also enjoy poetry. I enjoy public speaking. Honestly, through my matriculation in college, I learned that my giftings were predominantly in artistic expression. Now, I knew how to think critically and work well in technology, and I liked it because it afforded me the opportunity to create something from nothing. And I felt like I had never been exposed to an experience like that, and it really gave me the vision of being an innovator, and that appealed to me. That was immensely attractive to me. So, you know, those were some of my other passions, and also basketball. You know, I loved playing basketball and things like that. So, you know, those were my passions throughout college. I learned that I loved mentoring, I loved personal development, and I just loved to learn, you know. So college was the perfect place for that, and it allowed me to discover those different areas of myself.
Fantastic.
And you know, as you're speaking and people are taking this all in, one of these things, whether it's parents and aunts and grandparents, I want them to be able to see in you that you're like a lot of young men. You hit on a lot of typical things, from the sports aspect to the music, the rap, the creativity, but you still are very comfortable and found a home in a STEM-related technology field. People don't realize something that you said that's very key, that technology is a place for very creative, innovative people. A lot of us have very diverse interests, and it's not just that it's just about the computer and the bits and bytes. There's so much more, and there's a creative process built into problem solving and solutioning using technology. And that's where I think so many of our innovators and entrepreneurs are going to come in the, you know, seasons and years to come. And that's where the growing career and job opportunities are as well. So kudos to you for you being able to find that blend and for being well-rounded as well. But I want to also ask a question from your perspective. A lot of people, when they think about STEM or technology, they know that there is some math involved. And my question is a lot of young people are scared away by mathematics. So, and you probably have experienced that too with your peers. What would you say to them, and what are your thoughts as far as people who are afraid of STEM because of the math?
I think that in large part, the app towards STEM field, especially math, is pervasive because of the fact that we have been groomed to adopt a fear. I don't believe it's a fear that we own. I think it's a fear that's been imposed on us by, you know, what we hear and experiences we have. When we experience things for the first time and they don't go as we planned, we intuitively relate that to failure or it not being not being for me, or it not being something that I'm good at, therefore I'm going to dismiss it. And I think in large part that comes from the current culture that we as a millennial generation are facing. We live in an instant gratification Google Chrome era, as I like to call it. We want answers instantly, and if we face any type of opposition or learning curve in what we do, it frustrates us, and naturally follows that a lot of times we tend to succumb to that frustration and give up. So I think in large part it's imposed by, you know, societal perceptions and ideas, and also by the fact that we don't know delayed gratification.
No, absolutely. Valid point.
So Francisco, you spent some time at Morehouse. How did you select Morehouse College, and were you always interested in going to college?
Okay, so I'll answer the first question first. So I like to think that Morehouse picked me, and the reason why I said that is because initially I knew nothing about Morehouse. When I was introduced to the idea of the school, the way it happened is I was in high school, and I was met by a recruiter, and I was a very ambitious and prepared person. I mean, I had a little bag filled with my transcript, my SAT scores, and, you know, my everything, every information I needed to readily present to a recruiter in the event that an opportunity presented itself. So what happened was, you know, this recruiter says, and mind you, he's Morehouse, like, class of 1965. So he's like, well, you know, let me see your information. And he sees I have really, you know, I have like a 4.0 and a really high SAT. So he said, young man, you come with me, you're going to go to Morehouse. And I'm like, well, that's a pretty bold statement. So I, you know, I'm interested nonetheless. He talks a little more. He tells me, he says, yeah, you're going to go to Morehouse and I'm going to help you get there and I'm going to give you a full scholarship. And I told him, one of the first things I told him is, you know, I come from modest beginnings. So I told him, I said, now listen, now I don't have any money. I need to get a full scholarship. You know, and he's like, well, we're going to get you a full scholarship. You know, and I said, okay, well, what is Morehouse? He said, well, Morehouse is an HBCU, Historically Black College. It's a great school. Martin Luther King went there. It's also an all-boys school. And at that point, my mind said, okay, well, this conversation is over. You know, but he ended up taking me there, and I got exposed to a number of different experiences, one of which was the Candle in the Dark Gala. And I'll tell you what, this is what did it for me. Obviously, the fact that they gave me a full scholarship was part of it, but really what sold me was looking at the speakers in the Candle in the Dark Gala. I had never seen public speakers speak with such conviction, such passion. The way they descriptively colored the topics of discussion, it was astounding to me. I was amazed. And public speaking and coaching being my passion, it resonated with me on a really deep level. So as a result, you know, that's kind of what got me to go to Morehouse.
Well, that's a great story. I know if I had to do it all over again, I would seriously consider an all-male college. I think it's a great opportunity. It removes part of the distraction. There's always an opportunity to engage in the opposite sex and that type of those type of activities, but I think it allows you to focus a lot more and really be more precise, as you mentioned, in your conviction in whatever discipline you're going on. I think that was a great choice.
Yeah, definitely. And looking at it in retrospect, I mean, I now looking back on it, I understand I needed Morehouse because I needed that type of environment to foster an optimal level of focus. I was at a point where I was just getting exposed to freedom and really, you know, getting out there and socializing. That's why I was initially apprehensive to the idea. However, upon experiencing it, the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the rich history, the intangible qualities that Morehouse makes it a point to expose you to, I realized that it would definitely play a pivotal role in my trajectory and where I currently am now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me ask you, being a young person, you recently, comparatively to some of us, having gone through college and thinking back to even high school, how is the high school doing as far as counseling young people and advising them? I think you talked about a pivotal moment with your, I think you said your godfather who took you to the Saturday classes with BDPA. But how are the high school and the counselors doing with young people? And what's your advice to maybe what we could be doing to getting more young people thinking about college, planning for college, and seriously considering STEM careers?
Well, what I would say, if I could consolidate my advice into one word, I would say initiative. I would say take initiative, be proactive. Resources are allotted to you during your high school matriculation, but whether or not you benefit from those resources is directly contingent upon your willingness to make your needs known. To make your needs known, you have to vocalize what you want, and you have to be assertive in the matter. And what was surprising for me is many times opportunities were allotted to me not because I was the most qualified, but because I was the only person in the room. I was the only person actually being vocal, the only person putting myself in that position to be offered. And part of it was preparation. I was diligent. I realized that I came from modest beginnings. My family, I'm the oldest of seven, and I had some financial issues. And, you know, we got what we needed, but it was a struggle. The environment as well, but I realized that academia and learning was my ticket. I was good at it, I enjoyed it, and people saw that in me. So once I did that, I just made it a point to stay in my counselor's office as much as possible. I tried to live there, you know, but they wouldn't let me sleep there. But I basically just surrounded myself with that type of energy. I surrounded myself with people that were more knowledgeable, that had more clout, that had more networks, and I took advantage of those networks. When somebody came in a room, I made my desires known. And when you make your desires known, in the words of Paulo Coelho, one of my favorite books, The Alchemist, you know, the universe conspires in your favor. I believe in the law of attraction, and I think that that was part of it. Preparation was an integral part, but initiative is one as well. A lot of us are apprehensive about vocalizing our concerns for the fear that we will appear vulnerable to our counterparts. And one of the things that I learned is that it's better to look uninformed than to be uninformed. I was inquisitive, I took initiative, and I was proactive, and I think that was key.
Very, very good point. And again, I think that it's important. That's why this show, we wanted to have you kind of say these things. It's almost peer-to-peer, which is something we're going to dive into more a little later on as well. Is the mentoring coming from your peers and them hearing it from you and seeing already how far it's taken you. So let's talk about you taking initiative and going to that HSCC program. And for our audience, talk through from a student's perspective what HSCC, what it did for you. Talk about, I know that you participated in different chapters, what you were looking to get out of it, and maybe even how it today still helps you and has influenced where you are today.
So, Jacqueline, if you don't mind, could you reemphasize the last part of the question?
You know, I just wanted for you to kind of share how it is still influencing you, how that has carried over into where you are and what you have been able to achieve up to now.
Definitely, definitely. BDPA has had a profound influence on my upbringing, my growth, my development, and it's still having a residual influence on me, and I'm still continually involved and in a number of different ways. I would say as of right now, it's influencing me and impacting me in the way that, you know, for example, let's take this conversation happening right now. It wouldn't have transpired if it wasn't for the networks, the opportunities, and the conversations I was able to have by way of BDPA. You know, me and you and I met at a minority executive IT forum by way of BDPA. So I think that that's a testament to the influence it's having. I'm also developing a partnership with them in the realm of, you know, adding value to the Atlanta chapter organization, helping the kids out, coaching, becoming a member of the board, serving as a liaison between the older board members as well as the college demographic. I'm at a good place right now in that I just graduated from college, but I'm still very in tune to the college circuit, the high school circuit, what's going on in those different areas. So I offer a rich and creative perspective from that demographic, and also BDPA has helped me tremendously because they've offered networks, they've offered resources, advisors, mentors. Derek Brown, for example, the president of BDPA Atlanta, you know, he's helped me tremendously. He had a ceremony for me during my graduation. He's mentoring me through a book writing process. I'm actually writing a book right now. He's published several. Even my boss right now at FIS is a national board member for BDPA, Mike Williams. So, you know, it's helped me in such a different number of ways. I mean, it really it's been invaluable. It's been invaluable, and it continues to be invaluable. And the funny thing is, as a youth, I had a conceptual idea somewhat of what it will do, but now looking back on it, I couldn't have imagined how much it's given me as a result of being a part of it. I consider myself to have grown up under BDPA, so.
Absolutely. And, you know, appreciate all the things that you had to say about BDPA, and hopefully that's resonating with again, I always call out to our parents and our aunts and uncles, you know, reach out to the young people, and sometimes they go kicking and screaming initially, but I can't tell you of the testimonies that we've had, and I look forward to more testimonies as we go into our 40th year anniversary of BDPA and the HSCC program. So many young people who, you know, we're going to be following up with them to see where are they now. And that program, whether or not they pursue an IT career, I promise you, the networking, the connections, the teamwork, even being able to present and articulate and just finding mentors and people that they and the professional world can look up to, all of that comes packaged in with just giving up, and I say just, but giving up, sacrificing Saturdays, but you find yourself part of the BDPA family. We consider ourselves family, and I think Francisco is an example. Once you're in the family and your name gets out, then everyone's more than willing to take you under their wings and to help you whatever your aspirations are. So great opportunity, and kudos to you for, like you said, taking the initiative, taking advantage of that opportunity, even with a little reluctance, but that, you know, participating. And you've participated in several of the HSCC programs. Would you like to give a shout-out to some of the different chapters that you participated in?
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to give a shout out and really just give a testament to how influential BDPA has been. I would have to say that you know, my heart is always you know, with the DC chapter. That's where I started. That's where I had a lot of my success. We were ranked top three in the nation for 5 years during my tenure there. And, you know, most recently DC chapter has gotten placed first in nationals. I definitely got to shout them out. And interestingly enough, we're paying it forward and we're leaving a legacy. My little brother was the co-captain for the DC chapter team. So he was on the winning team, you know, and he's enjoying it. He's really gifted in technology. And BDPA has been tremendously helpful for him. He's getting scholarships, just got a brand new laptop. He's making friends. He's traveling. You know, I'm really happy to see him flourish, and it allows me to take a third party perspective. It's almost as if, you know, I matriculated through BDPA, and I had an inside perspective during the time of my matriculation, and now I can kind of see it in movie as a movie, and see him matriculate from a third party perspective, and look at how he develops, and it's definitely very exciting. And I'd like to shout out the Northern Virginia team as well. I was there for a year as well, and also the Baltimore chapter, you know, and obviously the Atlanta chapter. I mean, the Atlanta chapter is excellent. They're doing so many different things. They're, you know, they're adding so many different flavors to BDPA and what it has to offer, and, you know, they're really implementing some new practices that are going to be very refreshing for BDPA as a whole.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You mentioned the DC chapter there, Francisco. Yes, Perry's been doing a great job there, and I like what he's been doing with BDPA today as well on a multimedia level. And incidentally, I believe we interviewed your younger brother since he was a part of the winning team this year. We were both in Indianapolis, and we interviewed the winning team. So we met. And he's doing a great job, so much success to him in the future. Speaking of the future and how you made a transition from college life to the corporate professional world, and you mentioned FIS Global. I don't know if you know this, but I work for FIS Global as well. I'm in the I'm a senior architecture project manager, so I didn't know if you knew that or not.
Oh, yeah, actually, Jacqueline told me. I was definitely pleasantly surprised to know that. I'm like, man, like it's a small world, but, you know, that's awesome. I mean, and it just, like, it's so amazing how BDPA has such a rich network, and, you know, everybody is interconnected with each other in some fashion or another.
Absolutely. So tell us how you made that transition from college life. And I know you had a lot of other experiences outside of college, internships and things of that nature. But how did you make that transition to your first full-time position that you could really make an impact in?
Yeah, so I'll say this. Taking it back to BDPA was formative even before I came to college, because one of the things I failed to mention is to build a work habit, not just a regular work habit, but the take extra initiative work habit. Coming in on Saturdays, taking that 6 hours. Towards the end, booming in the nationals, doing that extra 4 hours on Sunday. Coming into college, I adopted that same work habit. Going into a full-time, slight change in mindset, you know, different demands and a different culture. But I did what I always do. I sought the advice of people who had already been on the path that I was imminently going to be a part of, and I was listening to their advice. I sought the counsel of those mentors. I made my needs vocal, and those needs were addressed because I was receptive and willing to take information and apply it. And I just, for me, it speaks to the value of mentorship. What I've begun to realize is you have a number of different levels and different areas that you traverse through in your life, but the principles remain constant. In high school, I thrived because I was vocal. I took initiative. I was proactive. I developed a work habit, and I made my desires known, and I attracted the resources necessary. I think the same is definitely applicable to the work world. I've talked to mentors who have been there. There's an ancient Chinese proverb that says, if you want to get to the other side of the hill, talk to somebody who's on their way back. And all I did was talk to somebody on their way back.
Wow, very powerful, very powerful. And if you've been talking to Mike Williams and our own Derek Brell, then I know you've been talking to some people who can give you some sage advice. So kudos for you for leveraging those relationships. Some people come, and even we find sometimes adults when they're networking, they sit in the back in the room or they hold up a wall. You've got to get in there. You've got to get engaged. You've got to have those conversations, and you've got to listen. So, you know, you're a smart young man. And those who are listening, first of all, we want to thank all of those who have called in and are listening live on the line. Welcome to the show. We're talking with Francisco Nunez, as well as those who are in the chat room. And if you haven't made your way to the chat room, if you're online at technologyexpresso.com, you can go to the chat line, and David's standing by and welcomes any questions or comments you have, and we'll read them on air. We welcome those as well. As we continue to talk with Francisco Nunez about his career path, career decisions, and let's start talking about and transitioning into another passion of yours, and that's mentoring. You've been mentored, and now you're also mentoring. What is that? Why are you so passionate about that?
Well, that's a golden question. So mentorship, I'm passionate about it for a plethora of reasons, and let me start here. I'm a product of mentorship. I've seen firsthand what it does, the effect it has, the growth and development that you get as a result. My mentorship started with my godfather. At 11 years of age, he introduced me to the book, The Greatest Salesman in the World by Ogden Dino, you know, and I realized that taking a personal interest in reading it on my own, it offered a perspective, but it paled in comparison to the perspective that I incurred as a result of reading it with him, reflecting on the information, gaining insight, and then getting his mature and seasoned perspective on the matter. That's what mentorship offers that individual learning does not. I'm not a proponent of the idea that knowledge is power. I don't think knowledge is power. I think knowledge is pervasively available. You go on Google, you make a click, and you get knowledge, you get information. Knowledge devoid of application is futile. When you apply information, then it becomes useful. Mentorship allows you to receive knowledge from not only a conceptual, literary perspective, but from a humanistic perspective. And then it offers another dimension in that it allows you to apply that knowledge in an environment that supports you. And then in addition to that, I'll say this, and this has served me really well. I like to think of mentorship as a Google Maps GPS. Okay, and the reason why I say that is this. Google Maps is going to show you the shortest route. It's going to show you an efficient route. Now, trial and error, failing forward, that's essential. You're going to need to do that to a degree regardless. But if I traveled 2 miles to get to destination X, and that was through trial and error, through tireless effort and dealing with struggles along the way, I have the power to then, through my experiences, tell a pupil, take this path, and it's going to cut your distance by half a mile. So mentorship allows you to walk a 1.5-mile journey versus a 2-mile journey, because a person more seasoned, knowledgeable, and wise than you can tell you that extra 0.5 miles is not necessary and does not yield fruit.
Very, very well put. I love your analogy. And people can relate to that. But with that said, now I'm going to ask you on the other side. It seems very natural that you know, most young people, they don't want to hear what, you know, the old folks have to say. They know more and they know a better way, and what happens to you isn't going to happen to them. Now, you're a young person mentoring young people. Is the conversation any different? Are they more willing to take it from one of their peers? Or what do you do when you find someone that's resistant? Or do you not find that as common? And maybe it's because of your age.
Well, I think resistance is an inextricable component in the mentorship process. You could have knowledge available, but not everybody is receptive to knowledge, and that doesn't necessarily boil down to just an age difference or a generational gap. I think what I offer as a younger person is more relatability. I have a shorter gap between the experiences they're currently facing and the place where I'm at. So obviously that would offer, a more relatable perspective. But I would say you always face resistance. What I believe in is I believe that you meet the person where they're at. And when you're mentoring somebody, you're leading. And leadership is not about someone following you or someone doing something for you. Leadership is a side-by-side journey in which both individuals, the leading party as well as the follower, are working in conjunction collaboratively to reach the same end. So I'm going to find out where you are. I'm going to accommodate to that, and I'm going to fulfill your need. And when you are no longer receptive to the need, I will serve as a moral support base, and I'll give you assistance and serve you to the extent which you're open to receiving, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, so Francisco, could you speak about those individuals that you do come in contact with, that you do speak to? What is your target audience? Which core age group do you feel more comfortable sharing information and assisting in their climb up the education and corporate ladder? What's your target audience? And when you have your target audience, what's your favorite topic to speak to? We know there's a wide area that we can speak to and that everyone needs help in. But where's your bread and butter? Which do you like talking about mostly? And what's your target audience, please?
Well, I feel like as far as the demographic I deal with most, I deal with a lot of young people, college, high school, a little bit after college, but I've mentored different types of people. I feel like mentorship is not confined to age. I feel like as a 22-year-old, I mean, I have information that's relevant to someone that's 50, 60, 70. I've even mentored people that are in their 50s, people that are in their 30s, people that are in their 40s. I don't limit myself. Will I say that initially I was more comfortable with a demographic that was closer to my age range? Yeah, I was. But naturally, we're more comfortable with the things that are familiar to us. I'm a proponent of getting outside of your comfort zone. I feel like growth begins at the end of your comfort zone, and life begins at the end of your comfort zone. So I feel like I make it a point to get as uncomfortable as possible because discomfort is the catalyst to growth. As far as my favorite topic to discuss, I like to discuss shifting the paradigm, shifting the mentality. A lot of us have the misconception that the deficiencies that we have in our life can be directly attributed to a lack of resources. I don't think it's a lack of resources. I think it's a lack of mindset. You take a person that's done one thing their whole life, you put them in a different situation. The fact that they're in a different situation is not what causes them to fail. The fact that they've taken the mindset of what they've done before and translationally try to apply that to the current place, that's where the failure comes in. If you put a farmer in a Maserati, it doesn't make him a race car driver. It's the mindset that makes him a race car driver. I feel like a lot of the disparities that are plaguing the minority community can be attributed to a lack of mindset, people that are seeking entrepreneurship, they take a employment $40,000 a year mentality and translationally try to apply it to a big business mentality. It doesn't work because what you're doing is you're looking for the instant gratification that you get from your employment, that biweekly check, and you're translationally trying to apply that to a big business, and it's not going to work. So a large part of it is the paradigm. I talk about the paradigm, your attitude and the mindset that you adopt. I feel like that's the driving force for the rest of your journey. If you get your paradigm right, then you can get everything else right. But if you don't get that right, that's the root of all of the issues or lack thereof. So I would say that's my favorite topic, and that manifests itself in a number of different ways, whether it be finance, self-image, environment, the law of input. You know, I'm a big believer in the law of input. Your thoughts and feelings become your words and actions. Your words and actions become your habits. Your habits then become your character, and then your character ultimately becomes your future and your destiny.
Absolutely. Well put. And you spoke about gravitating towards young people and people that share the experiences, that similar experiences as you. What are the type of questions that young people typically ask you when you're in a speaking engagement or after a speaking engagement, just networking back and forth? What are the type of questions that you're getting?
Well, a lot of people, you know, ask me about my work habits. They ask me about what I do daily. They ask me about how to build good habits. I think that a reoccurring theme is, how do I manage my time? How do I make the right decisions? I mean, I think during this time around with young people, I think a lot of the problem is, how do we make the right decisions, and how do we do so on a consistent basis? How do we organize what we do? You know, it's a chaotic period, I think, for a lot of people because they're not organized and they're not purpose-driven. A lot of it is purpose. If you don't do things with intentionality, you're not going to get the desired result because you're not intentional about what you're doing. So I think that's one of the reoccurring themes that I get. I mean, like, you know, what are you doing? What are your habits? What is your work habit? How did you learn how to acquire? And another thing I would say is, a lot of people are attracted to my ability to communicate, and they're always like, well, how do I communicate better? You know, and things like that.
That is awesome. Awesome. And just so our audience, just to kind of give them some point of reference, Francisco Nunez, he's spoken at classrooms at local high schools about education and success in Maryland. He was a keynote speaker for a graduating class of his elementary school. He hosted leadership development workshops for his mentorship program, Project 1 Million, giving leadership talks to classrooms for Morehouse Communication Department on the levels of leadership. He's spoken to BDPA students in D.C. and the Atlanta chapter about maximizing opportunities, preparing for college, and guarding input, speaking on the importance of research to the Baltimore chapter schools, giving research talks at the Lithonia High School here in Georgia, and speaking at the National BDPA Conference as a representative of HP, and most recently where we saw you, speaking at the Executive Minority IT Forum here in Atlanta just a month back. And I dare say there's a couple that I want to ask you about. The one about guarding your input. Can you talk about that? What was that about?
Yeah, definitely. Guarding your input, honestly, I think it falls down to this. The things that you take in are going to affect what you produce. For example, your body is a machine. It's an engine. In order to keep it running right, you got to feed it with the right things. You got to eat the proper foods, maintain the proper diet, engage in the proper exercise. Life is much the same from my perspective. I feel like the type of music you listen to, for example. I make it a point not to listen to secular music. Why? Let's take the minority community, for example. If you look at hip-hop culture and you look at the current disparities flagging the minority community, if you want to know what's happening in the minority community or what the problems we're currently facing at, look at the hip-hop culture, and it's going to mirror the issues. For example, you know, you got rappers talking about impulsive spending. You know, okay, I'm a spend my money. You know, I'm a blow money. And that is a direct correlation of me being quote-unquote real. You know, I'm going to demoralize women. You know, I'm going to be a flashy person, be a person that embellishes. That's the current plight right now. I mean, you know, you got people standing in line, you know, for hours at a time for a pair of, like, you know, $200 Jordans, but we won't spend $10 on a book about John Maxwell on leadership. You know, so that's what I mean in terms of the law of input. You know, you really got to monitor your input because those are going to affect your thought patterns. Those are going to affect your actions. And whether you accept it or not, it's an intricate part of the person you become. We, neurologically speaking, we only count 5% of our neural real estate. So the question becomes, what happens to that other 95%? You know, 95% of our mental reservoir is subconscious. You know, so then the problem becomes, okay, well, you know, what do we do about that, and how do we create a situation where we are mitigating the food that we feed our mind? That's where guarding your input. Also about people. You need people that are going to cultivate your dreams, cultivate your innermost desires, and help you align with your purpose. If you don't have people doing that, they're either going to add value or they're going to diminish value, and you have to make a decision of what you want to expose yourself to.
Thank you for elaborating on that. And I also want to give you an opportunity, would you talk about Project 1 Million?
Yeah, definitely. Project 1 Million, I mean, that's very near and dear to my heart. I mean, basically, you know, I have a mentor. He lives in Canada, and he's been
Well, I just want to share with you, we're speaking with Francisco Nunez, and he has been talking about his pursuit of STEM opportunities. He started out at Morehouse College, was a product of BDPA's HSCC, as well as a strong proponent for mentorship, and his intention is also to mentor others, and he's well on his way. He has a long resume of speaking engagements, and he's open to even more speaking engagements. If you'd like to know how you could get Francisco Nunez to speak at your school, college, or program, especially getting them in front of young people, whether they're college-bound, high school students, or already in college, you can email Technology Espresso, and we'll make sure and get in contact with Francisco. Secondly, you can always meet up with him at any of the Atlanta BDPA events if you're here locally. He's a member and always a participant in the Atlanta BDPA events. And we fully intend to have him back on our show. There's a long list of other topics I still want to ask him questions about. He's a busy young man and hard to catch up with, but when we can, we're going to get him back on the show, back on the schedule. He talks on a variety of things from self-image, financial literacy, entrepreneurship, the importance of great association, and also getting the proper input, filtering your input.
Yes, we seem to have had a little bit of technical difficulty here. He will hopefully be dialing back in. If not, you'll be able to download and listen to the entire transcript of our conversation with Mr. Francisco Nunez at www.technologyespresso.com. You'll find this interview as well as our archive of all past interviews, and stay tuned and connected with us for future interviews with individuals, aspiring individuals such as Mr. Nunez himself. Look forward to those conversations here on TechnologyExpresso.com.
Absolutely. And let's talk about some of our future shows that are coming up, too, as we're winding down this hour.
Technology Tuesday will continue. If not this Tuesday, then the following Tuesday. Stay attached and connect on our calendar. We will continue that series as well as other series that Jacqueline hosts as far as social media is concerned. Dawn Majors, another one of our co-patriots and co-workers here at Technology Espresso, are heavily involved in social media and what they call the Tweet Up, the Twitter parties. Those are pretty exciting. A lot of people have been asking about those, and a lot of energy is being created around that. So stay in touch with us. Give us a call. Drop us a line. Stay in touch. Like us on Facebook and our other social media. stay in touch with us, and we will get you connected. Remember, listen, learn, leverage, and launch.
Absolutely. So, as David mentioned, we were speaking today with Francisco Nunez, and we will have him back on the show and continue the interview and dive into some other areas. If you enjoyed the topics that we covered today, please, by all means, email us at technologyexpresso@gmail.com. And we will, whatever questions or ideas or even speakers that you'd like to suggest for the show, we would be more than welcome. We want to serve up whatever you're interested in. We look for those things that are STEM-related, related to entrepreneur and innovation. And this is a hot area, and everyone can leverage technology. So that's why we're serving it up fast, hot, and intense. We're doing all the research so that you can, we can serve it up to you and make it easy for you to leverage technology and whatever you'd like to pursue. So I guess with today's show, we're going to go ahead and call it a day. It's been great talking with Francisco Nunez. I've had a tongue twister all day with that. But Francisco Nunez, and we look forward to our next time we have him on the show. Again, follow Atlanta BDPA if you're in the Atlanta area. If you, too, want to network or find out more about the high school computer competition, whether you have students you want to bring to the program that meets on Saturdays, teaches them programs, then they get to compete for scholarships, or maybe you want to volunteer. They're always looking for teachers. Just go to atlantabdpa.org. Also look for upcoming collaboration with Next Level Technology and Technology Expresso as we expand the social media bootcamp, helping small businesses leverage social media. Look for that as well. And you can always follow us, again, as David said, on Facebook and Twitter if you want to know the times and dates of those activities and programs. And lastly, you can also text the word LAUNCH to 41411. Again, the word LAUNCH from your smartphone to 41411, and you'll get a text message reminder whenever we're having our next radio program.
Yes, absolutely. And as additionally, go to our website, www.technologyexpresso.com, and look for our YouTube channel. We've got some video out there as well that that gives you another medium, so to speak, to engage with us here at technologyexpresso.com. So let me add to that and say watch, listen, learn, leverage, and launch. That's all for today, folks. Have a good rest of the day.
You've been listening to Technology Expresso Cafe Radio. Visit our website portal at www.technologyexpresso.com for a full list of broadcast archives, social media handles, and upcoming shows. Keep up with Technology Expresso while on the go by texting the word LAUNCH to 41411. That's texting the word LAUNCH to 41411. Thanks again, everyone, and remember, listen, learn, leverage, launch.